This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive. This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
We have devolved as human beings. And that's why I think the monthly review is so important, because in its first issue, it published an article by Albert Einstein on socialism. And Einstein put forward a concept of socialism which was much closer to the advocacy of a radical revolution of values of Martin Luther King in 1967 than to Marx's ideas of socialism in terms of economic growth in the 19th century. And I think to know that we're in another century, actually two centuries from Marx.
We have to leave it there. Grace Lee Boggs, thanks so much for being with us, and John Bellamy Foster of the Monthly Review. That does it for the broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
In keeping with KPFT's mission of bringing the voices of the community to you, here is one of your candidates in the upcoming election for local station board.
Hi, I'm Wesley Bethune, the tough, smart candidate for your local station board. I'll fight for you to bring more education-based programming to your airwaves. I'll hammer the corporate suck-ups and right-wing ideologues who would like to turn your station into a 24-hour-a-day jukebox. Nonviolent, of course. After all, we are Pacificans. But seriously, 30 seconds isn't enough time to tell you. Go to the website and listen to my entire opinion of what's going on and what we need to do. Bye.
That was a statement by Wesley Bethune. For complete candidate statements and more information about all of your candidates for the local station board, please visit kpft.org. The future of KPFT and the entire Pacifica network now rests upon the participation of our listener members. It depends upon your vote. Let your voice be heard with your vote. This is KPFT Houston.
Good morning. This is Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. The purpose of Open Journal is to provide media access to the greater Houston community. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, sometimes it's controversial, but Open Journal is always eclectic, and it's always KPFT. At the end of the hour, we'll tell you how you can support this station and host a program. Stay tuned for Open Journal after BBC News headlines from London. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
First, the news.
BBC News with Roy Lamer. Officials in the United States have confirmed that President Obama is shelving the controversial missile defense system planned to be based in Eastern Europe. A Pentagon spokesman said the decision had been taken because of an intelligence reassessment of Iranian missile development plans. Mike Wooldridge reports.
The missile shield was always controversial, Russia claiming it was less about countering a potential threat to Europe and the US from a country such as Iran, and more a threat to Russia's nuclear deterrent and its own security. President Bush proposed placing interceptor missiles in Poland and an accompanying radar installation in the Czech Republic to target long-range missiles from Iran. The Pentagon says it will announce major changes to the system this afternoon. The focus will now be on countering the threat of Iranian short- and medium-range missiles.
The Russian ambassador to NATO called President Obama's decision not to proceed with the missile defense system a breakthrough for U.S.-Russian relations. Speaking to the BBC, Dmitry Rogozin said the announcement removed what he called a niggling problem which had prevented the United States and Russia from doing any real work between them. NATO's Secretary General also welcomed the decision as a positive step and said that all 28 NATO member states had been consulted. Indonesia's national police chief says the wanted militant Nurdin Mohamed Top has been killed in a police raid. He described him as the leader of Al-Qaeda in Southeast Asia and said he'd been on the run for 9 years. Karishma Vaswani reports from Jakarta.
Nurdin Mohammed Top, the alleged mastermind behind the Jakarta bombings in July and a series of deadly attacks across the archipelago, including in Bali, where both Indonesians and Westerners died. Indonesian authorities have been under pressure to capture Top. In a raid in August, they thought they'd killed him, only to have DNA tests reveal that wasn't the case. Authorities say they're sure this time the man they killed in a raid in central Java is Nurdin because his fingerprints match those of the alleged militant.
Reports from northern Yemen say more than 80 civilians have been killed in air raids on people displaced by fighting between government forces and Shia rebels. The New York-based group Human Rights Watch has called for a full investigation into the reported incident. Bob Trevelyan reports.
Witnesses and the rebels say Yemeni Air Force planes attacked people who'd set up a makeshift camp beside a road in Amran province. Many of those killed were said to be women, children, and elderly people. Yemeni officials have denied there was any such camp in the area. They say the military killed a number of rebels and cut their supply lines. A witness denied any rebels were present, but said they did sometimes use the road where the attack took place. He said some of the civilians were carrying rifles, as is common for Yemeni tribesmen.
BBC World News. Lawyers representing 30,000 people in Ivory Coast who say they were poisoned by toxic waste have confirmed that they're close to reaching a compensation agreement with the company responsible for the waste. It was dumped in 2006 by contractors working for the oil trading company Trafigura, which has always denied that the waste was dangerous to human health. The news of the settlement comes as a UN report said there appeared to be strong evidence that the illnesses and 15 deaths in Ivory Coast were connected to the dumping. A suicide car bomber in Afghanistan has killed at least 16 people, including six Italian soldiers, in an attack on a military convoy in the capital, Kabul. The Afghan authorities said many other people were injured. The soldiers serving with the NATO-led forces were traveling on a road between the airport and an area where some foreign embassies are based. Police in Australia have charged a man with a series of sex offences in a case which has drawn comparisons with that of Josef Fritzl in Austria. Here's Phil Mercer.
The man was arrested earlier this year when his alleged victim went to the police. He's due to appear before magistrates in November, where he's expected to face various rape and incest charges. It's reported that the suspect had been sexually assaulting his daughter since the 1970s, when she was 11 years old. It's alleged he went on to father her four children. Australian detectives have revealed few details about the case because of a court suppression order.
European football is testing a radical change in the way matches are refereed with the use of two extra officials in the new Europa League competition. Matches in the group stage, which kicks off in a few hours' time, will see an extra match official deployed behind each goal to judge goal line decisions and penalty claims. The experiment has been ordered by European football's governing body, UEFA. BBC World News.
And good morning. It is 6 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. You're tuned in to the Mighty 90 KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM on your radio dial, 100,000 broadcast watts of freedom right here in the Petro Metro, and commercial free, listener sponsored community radio. 89.5 on the island of Galveston as well, and worldwide at kpft.org. Thanks for being there, and for the next 20 minutes, the phones are available for your calls and comments. This is the Community Conversation, and I'm KPFT's General Manager, Dwayne Bradley. Good morning to you. I want to send a special shout out to our friends up on the near north side at Fonville Middle School. And thank you to my good friend Guy Harrison, who does some work at the Aurora Pictures Show. Also did some volunteer work with us yesterday up on the roof at Fonville Middle School. And, you know, it's off East Little York, in between 59 and 45. And if you're up there and maybe you have kids going there, next time you pick the kids up when you're coming through the carpool thing, tune your radio to 1670 on the AM side. And you'll actually be able to hear some reports from the kids. There's a little micro-powered AM radio station operating now at Fonville Middle School. We helped put that together with Mary Ann and some folks from a group called Artist Boat out of Galveston, and it's a very worthy organization. You should check them out. We'll have them on someday to talk in depth more about it. This is the second school that we've done this AM broadcast project in the neighborhood up there at Fonville Middle School on East Little York, and there's the original one is at Browning Elementary School off Patton in the Heights area. So that's just off Airline in Patton. And it's only, you know, you can only hear it for about a block, and maybe less. But it's really kind of a cool thing. So a shout-out to the Artist Boat folks and to the parents of those students who are going to get to hear some of their children's reports through this little AM service that KPFT helped put up there with the Artist Boat. So that being said, 8 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, we already have Kevin and John in the queue. We're going to go to the phones here in just a moment. Let me put a few reminders out there. First of all, tonight, if you're on the south side, the Bay Area Community Center is open this evening from 6:30 to 9 o'clock for a forum with all of the candidates for the 5 at-large city council seats here in Houston. There's a meet and greet at 6:30, a forum from 7 to 9, and it's open to all. It's sponsored by Bad Women, which is the Bay Area Association of Democratic Women. That's tonight, a public forum for candidates for the 5 at-large city council seats. Again, that's at the Bay Area Community Center, 5002 NASA Road 1 in Seabrook tonight, 6:30 meet and greet, 7 o'clock for the forum. Of course, the great mad mayoral debate scheduled for tomorrow night here in the Montrose was canceled, as have been most of the subsequent debates between the leading mayoral candidates, that being Anise Parker, Gene Locke, and Peter Brown. And you may have read about that in yesterday's Chronicle. Want to invite you to come to a KPFT town hall meeting sponsored by our local station board and the Anti-Racism and Diversity Committee of our local station board this Sunday evening, actually late afternoon, 5 o'clock. There'll be a little free refreshment, meet-and-greet kind of a scenario. 5:30 to 8 is the formal town hall meeting. You can express your views, needs, and concerns. I'll be there along with other KPFT management. I believe Ernesto Aguilar, the program director, will be there. Members of the local station board will be there. Candidates running in the local board elections that are going on right now will be there. And it's at the Harris County AFL-CIO Union Hall. That's at 2506 Sutherland. Sutherland is a small street near the corner of Telephone Road and Wayside in the Gulf Gate area south of U of H. So you're invited to come to that from 5 to 8 this Sunday afternoon into the early evening. And good news, if you pledge during the summer sizzle back in August for the Woodstock box, the limited edition cube with the Woodstock DVD package and all the collectibilia that went with that, the box sets have arrived here at the station. We have a pickup scheduled if you want to come by the station, 419 Lovett Boulevard. That's Lovett like Lyle, not Lovett like Lubbock. It is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week from 9:30 to 5:30. So anytime during the day next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you can come by. If you haven't paid yet, you can pay. If you've already paid, just come on by and pick up your box and go home and pop in the DVDs. And suddenly Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, Peter, Paul, and Mary, were they there? Jimi Hendrix was, The Who, et cetera, et cetera. So thanks to all of you who pledged during the summer sizzle, and also you can pick up your box sets. Another event, just to put it on your calendar, next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, in participating with the KPFT elections process. You've been hearing one candidate per hour, every day, for it seems like every week. For a long time now, it's been about 3 weeks. And those will continue through this electoral season until we reach our quorum, the cutoff date for you to return your ballot. And we implore you to please send your ballot back in. There will be some live on-air debates, candidate forums, if you will, of the folks for the KPFT election. And that's next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in this hour between 9 and 10 a.m. following BBC News, maybe a little break for Garrison Keillor, have a little cultural breather in the middle of this heated political discourse between you and the different candidates on the KPFT local station board election platform. It's 12 past 9, and Kevin, you're first in the queue from Splendora. Welcome to the air.
Hello, Dwayne.
Hi.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit about the concept of government.
Okay.
Because that's exactly what it is. It's a concept, and concepts don't exist in reality. They only exist within the mind. So what we do have in reality are we have people with guns, and we have people who obey those people. I mean, this isn't a voluntary system. I mean, anybody with a half brain and a piece of a heart understands the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to be counterproductive and destructive. But whether we like it or not, we're obligated to support those wars economically. So because the government uses violence to meet its ends, and there is no rational sense to the expansion of violence, we see what we see today, this war, torture, millions of our citizens imprisoned in these rape camps of the state, because government is a non-answer to real questions, like what do we do about the poor or the elderly or pollution, in the same way that religion is a non-answer to real questions like what is the nature of human beings or where did the universe come from. I mean, it is a dumb, ugly, and primitive way to solve human problems. And I don't know all the answers, and I don't think anyone does, but what I can tell you is this, Dwayne. The only moral way will be to see people cooperate involuntarily and not institutionalize coercion. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Kevin, from up there in Splendora. John, right here in Southeast Houston, welcome to the air. You're at KPFT.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What I have to say is not too pleasant.
Okay.
But I'm... I love... Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! And BBC. I happen to be retired so I can do what I please, and so I stay up late and sleep in late. But with all of these schedule changes that have been made in KPFT, I don't know when the other kinds of programs that I listen to, some of them were before lunch and some were after lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time I turn on KPFT, other than those hours in the morning, and anything earlier than that I never listen to because I don't wake up. It's just this music. And I was, my attention was caught by the last candidate to say something that was just at the end of, between this program.
Sure.
And Amy Goodman. And
mm-hmm.
I can't remember his name, but he made some comment about the cosmic jukebox.
That was Wesley.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I happen to agree with that particular plank of whatever his platform is.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted, unfortunately, to add a negative note that it's just, like, I don't need to say it again, too much music of the kind that really doesn't appeal to me. But yet, I find myself kind of a loner. I live down here in Southeast Houston. I had an Obama. I had several Democratic signs up in my front yard in Sagemont,
mm-hmm.
and some of them got stolen right out of my front yard.
Well, it might have been by other folks collecting them. I had one taken out of my yard in the Heights, and I figure it was not some Republican stealth force. It was somebody else that wanted one.
Well, nobody took the Obama one.
Okay.
And I've got the plastic one.
Yeah.
Plastic sleeve one. Okay, well, anyhow...
Well, I'm sorry the new schedule isn't really doing it for you, but, we're trying to make this a very accessible station to as many people as possible.
I don't have the answer to lots of questions. I'd love to throw in my two bits regarding what the previous person said, but the issues he raises are so big.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, though, that based upon Amy Goodman's program, I'm planning on writing... my congressman, if I can remember it, I don't know if you did. You listen to Amy Goodman by any chance?
I did. Yes.
The self-righteous senator, Republican, that I guess he was the author of the amendment that they adopted when he was describing what he was supposed to be Acorn, it sounded to me like it was these offshore traders that are making lots of money with bank accounts. And you just take the three adjectives that he was using, and man. So things like that could be. And talking about vote manipulation, we could go a lot more than just Karl Rove.
Sure.
Okay, well, thanks.
John, hey, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us, and stay tuned, and appreciate you being out there in Sagemont. It's a little late for our traffic break at 18 past the hour of 9, but hey, we'll be back in just a moment.
This is KPFT Houston. Here's your traffic update. There's a four-vehicle pileup on I-45 Gulf Freeway at Edgebrook, affecting one shoulder lane at this time, so they've apparently been pulled over to the side. And there's a two-vehicle accident on 59 Southwest Freeway northbound at Shepherd, affecting two main lanes. And a road closure on 610 North Loop westbound from 45 North to Ella Boulevard with one main lane closed due to construction. It's 75 degrees and partly cloudy. Back to Open Journal.
Okay, the phone number is 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. This is the community conversation portion of today's Open Journal. Coming up at 9:30, the community spotlight focus today called Bringing No-Kill Sheltering to Houston's Animal Control, hosted by Brett Sundermeyer and her guest Nathan Winograd. That's coming up at 9:30 after the Writer's Almanac at 9:25. Wide Open Spaces at 10 with Rourke, and at noon today on the World Cafe, David Dye, special guest in the studio, Juju music legend, iconic figure himself, King Sunny Ade. Wow, live today at noon. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Mike in Webster, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to add to the healthcare discussion and some of the things that I've discovered recently that has been aired, but I don't think it's made mainstream media, is the fact that in Germany, if you lose your job and there's socialized health care, you still get health care. The government takes over and then propels your health care till you get another job.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting tidbit I thought about in the UK, they're able to cap costs because, for example, if you go to the pharmacy and you purchase any type of pharmaceutical, it's purchased by the state first, and then they're able to cap the costs, and then they distribute it to the patient by their own means, and they keep task on watching those costs as they distribute those medications. And the very fact that their health care is only like 11 to 12% of their gross product, and compared to ours, between 18 and 21%. I think that's proof of the pudding right there.
Sounds like it, Mike. Thanks for sharing that from there in Webster this morning on KPFT's Open Journal. Running short on time, folks, so let's be brisk with your thoughtfulness. Pam, right here in town. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. You?
Doing great, thank you. I actually wanted to discuss with you very briefly this morning regarding, you know, why is it that some people have a problem with if taxes are raised by the health care reform? Currently in Texas, and I was watching the news the other night, and they mentioned about the cost of our premiums. It's like it was over 124% more that we're paying than what we did like in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather pay more in my taxes than what I'm currently paying in premiums. My premiums are tripling. So I don't understand the argument there. My taxes would not triple as high as what my current premiums would if we had to rely on taxes being increased for the health care reform. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah. So I was just thinking about that.
Well, Pam, thanks for putting it on the table for everyone to consider.
Okay, thank
all
you.
Right. All right, you have a great day.
You now.
Hey, Stephen in League City, welcome aboard.
That was a good answer, wasn't it? You just kind of blew her off. You know, you had BBC on in the morning, and that was good programming. You could go from one station to the other, and you could get news.
Yeah.
And I don't know why there is some kind of compunction to take something that works and change it. I don't know what your people sit around at the table and think about, but people liked BBC, and basically you are an entertainment-based radio station, and you should be giving people what they want. And I think many people have expressed this to you, and I don't think you guys are hearing it. And I think it's time that you look at that, because if you want more people to listen to your radio station, you need to give them what they want. And we all liked listening to BBC. And now we are inundated with talk radio all over the place. You guys had the only thing that was different. And you took what was working, and you messed with it, and you broke it. And I don't know who came up with the idea, but I don't think that it, you know, will be any advantage to you in raising funds.
Well, I'm going to have to dispute that. I mean, it obviously doesn't work for you. And the BBC at 8 worked fine for me as well. I preferred the schedule in my personal life the way it was prior to the change in July, as some other people did. I'm adapting to the changes as well. I find myself getting up a lot earlier and tuning into talk programming on KPFT earlier than I used to, and I'm adapting to that change. And
it's another station that one can listen to where we actually get news. You're adapting, and that's the thing. You're adapting. It's like it's a rainy day. You're adapting to the rain. Why can't you make it so that it is a pleasant thing and people want to listen to your station instead of having to adapt? Why are you forcing people to adapt? Why can't you just give people what they want?
Well, the simple answer, and again, just like with Pam earlier, time is too short and fleeting for a full lengthy discussion and answer to this question.
Right.
But, you know, what works or doesn't work for you does or doesn't work for someone else. I mean, there is no one answer that's going to please everyone. We've found that to be true time and time again.
And to bring BBC back.
Okay. Hey, Stephen, we're going to have to go. Thanks for being there. And BBC, of course, is back. It was on at 9 o'clock for the headlines. It's on throughout the day, and it's on every morning from 7 to 8 a.m. here on KPFT. It's 25 past 9, time for Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac, followed at 9:30 by the Community Spotlight, bringing no-kill sheltering to Houston's Animal Control with Brett Sundermeyer and her guest Nathan Winograd. Wide Open Spaces at 10 with Rourke, and World Cafe with King Sunny Day at noon today. I leave you with this thought from Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who said, "The happiest people I have known have been those who gave themselves no concern about their own souls, but did their uttermost to mitigate the miseries of others." Take care, y'all.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 17th of September, 2009. It's the birthday of the filmmaker Baz Luhrmann, born on this day, 1962, Sydney, Australia. Grew up in a village in New South Wales, spent a lot of time watching movies. His mother was a ballroom dance teacher. One of his first movies was about the world of ballroom dance, Strictly Ballroom, 1992. And then he made a big popular version of Romeo and Juliet in 1996, which grossed almost $50 million. Luhrmann said, "What people forget is that Shakespeare was a restless entertainer. When he played the Elizabethan stage, he was basically dealing with an audience of 3,000 drunken punters who were selling pigs and geese in the stalls. He played to everyone from the street sweeper to the Queen of England, and his style was to have stand-up comedy one moment, a song, and then the highest tragedy right next to it. He was a rambunctious, sexy, violent, entertaining storyteller, and we've tried to be all those things." Today is Constitution Day in the United States. It was on this day, 1787, the final draft of the Constitution was signed. There were 55 delegates working on it. They'd been showing up day after day for almost 4 months in the State House in Philadelphia. 1862, on this day, the Battle of Antietam, in which more Americans died in one day than in any other day in our history. It took place near Sharpsburg, Maryland, Robert E. Lee hoping to get supplies and men in Maryland. The battle started at a cornfield, went on for 12 hours. The Confederate troops had the advantage at the beginning, but a Union scout found a copy of their battle plans. 12,000 Union soldiers died, almost 11,000 Confederates. It's the birthday of the writer Frank O'Connor, born in Cork, Ireland, 1903, grew up in poverty, dropped out of school at the age of 14, joined the Irish Republican Army for a few years, then became a librarian. He wrote plays and poetry and novels and biographies, but he's best known for his short stories, published in his collected stories of Frank O'Connor, 1981. And it's the birthday of William Carlos Williams, born Rutherford, New Jersey, 1883, who wrote, "It is difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there." He worked in Rutherford as a doctor for his whole life and wrote poetry as well, up until his death at the age of 80. Here's a poem about William Carlos Williams, the physician poet, on his birthday, a poem by John A. Stone, entitled "Getting to Sleep in New Jersey." "Not 20 miles from where I work," William Williams wrote after dark, after the last baby was caught, knowing that what he really ought to do was sleep, Rutherford slept, while all night William Williams kept scratching at his prescription pad, dissecting the good lines from the bad. He tested the general question whether feet or butt or head first ever determines as well the length of labor of a poem. His work is over. Bones and guts and red wheelbarrows, the loneliness, and all the errors a heart can make, the other end of a stethoscope. Outside, the wind corners the house with a long crow. Silently, his contagious snow covers the banks of the Passaic River, where he walked once, full of fever, tracking his solitary way back to his office and the white day, a peculiar kind of bright-eyed bird, hungry for morning and the perfect word. "Getting to Sleep in New Jersey" by John A. Stone, from Music from Apartment 8, New and Selected Poems, published by Louisiana State University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly Editor's Podcast online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Thomas Schweitzer and Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you come to KPFT to produce your own program. This airtime is a free service given to those interested in offering their ideas, passions, knowledge, and talents to the listenership. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed on Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now, it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Good morning. You're listening to Open Journal on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Beth Sundermeyer, president of No Kill Houston. That's nokillhouston.org. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing the no-kill model of sheltering to animal shelters in the Houston area. Our goal is to stop the needless deaths of the 80,000 animals that are killed in Houston's 5 kill shelters every year. Our speaker today is Nathan Winograd, who is the director of the No Kill Advocacy Center. That's nokilladvocacycenter.org. He is a former criminal prosecutor and attorney. He has held a variety of leadership positions, including the director of operations for the San Francisco SPCA and executive director of the Tompkins County, New York SPCA, two of the most successful no-kill shelters in the nation. He has written animal protection legislation at the state and national level and has created successful no-kill programs in both urban and rural communities. He has consulted with a wide range of animal protection groups, including some of the largest and best known in the nation. Nathan was also hired by the City of Houston to assess BARC, which is Houston's animal control facility, to give guidance as to what BARC needs to do to transform itself into a no-kill shelter. His report on BARC was recently released by the city. It's 196 pages of what I think are pretty shocking and disturbing information. Hello, Nathan. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
First of all, there are a lot of people out there who have not heard of the term no-kill, or they have misconceptions about what no-kill means. So just so everybody knows what we're talking about and what our goals are for BARC, can you explain your definition of no-kill?
Sure. It's important to first point out, because it's the thing that lay people are the most nervous about. We're not talking about releasing truly vicious dogs into the community. We're not talking about compromising public health or public safety. In fact, in nearly 95% of the cases, public safety, public health, and the saving of animals in shelters are compatible. In a very, very small percentage of circumstances, and I would argue it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 5% of all the animals coming in, dogs are going to be too aggressive to safely adopt out into the community. And in today's world, unfortunately, but realistically, those dogs are killed. In a small percentage of cases, the animals are going to be hopelessly ill or injured, or irremediably suffering, and those animals, sadly, will be killed. So what we are looking to do is to end the killing of both healthy and treatable animals in shelters, which together comprise somewhere in the neighborhood of 95% of all the animals entering shelters in the United States today.
Wow. Okay, I read your assessment over the last couple of days, and I have a whole lot of questions. Obviously, I knew BARC conditions were bad, but I have to say I was stunned at the lack of the most basic care, like basic cleaning, feeding, and watering the animals. And I have to say I was very dismayed reading a lot of it, because the change agent hired by the City of Houston, Jerry Fusco, had been there 2 weeks when you were there. So I have to wonder why he hadn't seen and already rectified at least some of what you saw, like the absolute and utter filth that is visible everywhere in many of the pictures that's in your report, particularly in places where animals are handled and would therefore come into contact with diseases left by other animals. So can you comment on some of the cleanliness and disease prevention issues that you saw at BARC?
Well, if I can take a step back, I mean, one of the very basic problems with conditions at the Houston Animal Shelter is the facility itself. I mean, it really is, unfortunately, one of the most poorly designed facilities that I have come across, and I've visited shelters all over the country. And what makes it so poorly designed is, basic things. First of all, there's no hot water in the facility, making it impossible to truly clean and disinfect animal spaces. So that alone is going to make it almost impossible to control the spread of pathogens, and as a result, unfortunately, animals are going to needlessly get sick. In one bathroom alone, 3 of the 4 faucets didn't even work, and the 4th didn't have hot water. But those issues aside, you have the facility. It's what's there now. Changes can be made, but because of the limitations of the facility, and I just gave you one example. I mean, there are numerous. It is really incumbent upon the staff and supervisors and those who oversee them in the bureaucracy to ensure that you are operating at a very high level of competency in order to overcome or as much as possible overcome the deficits given to you by that facility. And unfortunately, I saw a lot of practices among the staff that not only didn't do that, but it actually helped spread the disease even further. They didn't change gloves between handling sick animals and healthy animals. They didn't change, when you clean, for example, a cat's cage with one rag, they didn't always change it out when they cleaned other cats. None of the doorknobs were ever cleaned. The light fixtures were filthy, so when people turned on a light and then they handled an animal, they helped spread a disease. I mean, I could go on with example after example, and I tried to lay it all out in the nearly 200-page report, but, you know, let me just summarize and say there are some massive animal care deficits at BARC that not only need to be taken care of, but they need to be taken care of immediately.
Well, and I've been wondering for some time why diseases are continually just rampant there, and BARC leaders say they're doing things to prevent it, and they spent $70,000 on new supplies, but still disease was rampant. And I was thinking, surely there's some secret disinfectant that they were missing, but it seems like it was just pretty basic cleaning that they're not doing, just soap and water and bleach. There's nothing secret about it.
Well, let's put that building aside, which was not properly designed. It speaks of an effort to build a building at the lowest possible cost, basically to warehouse and kill animals at the lowest possible cost. So put the building aside. There is no magic formula that is going to improve conditions at any shelter without supervision of staff and ensuring that staff operate at a high level of care. That kind of stuff is not difficult to do, and in the report I gave some sample management checklists and staff checklists that they should be doing every single day. So I actually saw changes from what people have described in the past. The veterinary technicians had computer stations that they could take into the different rooms to see that the right animal is in the right cages, that a particular animal is to be given a particular medication, and all that is good stuff. But that's not going to reduce disease if the veterinary technicians don't change their gloves between individual animals. That's not going to... You can buy whatever commercial disinfectant and cleaning agent. You can buy the cheapest or you can buy the most expensive. Neither of them are going to reduce the spread of disease if staff aren't thoroughly cleaning and thoroughly disinfecting and practicing, basic animal care and husbandry practices to ensure that these animals aren't making each other sick, to ensure that people aren't making the animals sick, to ensure that the operations are running at a high caliber. It always comes down to staff and supervisors, and unfortunately when I was there they weren't living up to the responsibility entrusted to them by the citizens of Houston.
It's 9:40. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Beth Sindemar, president of No Kill Houston. We're speaking with Nathan Winograd, the director of the No Kill Advocacy Center, who was hired by the city of Houston to assess Houston's animal control facilities and whose report was recently released. You said that the North Kennels are some of the most poorly designed that you have seen. Personally, I've had nightmares about that kennel, but explain why you say the North Kennels are so much worse than South.
Well, first of all, I think, going to the core of that are the kennels where the dogs are housed. They are so small that large dogs are not even able to stand in them from nose to tail, meaning if you were to take a dog and just have him stand erect, his nose or tail couldn't fit inside the kennel. For some dogs, they had to maintain an unnatural posture. And one of the photographs I showed, because in the back there are some... right off the ground, a couple of feet off the ground is a little platform that small dogs can get on top of, but large dogs can't. And so what I saw were large dogs with their hind ends up in the air and their front paws down in front, and it required them to stand in their own feces. It required them to sleep on top of their own feces. These are dogs that aren't getting out of the kennels. except to be cleaned, tied out for a few minutes while the kennels are cleaned and put back in. So for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, in the case of some dogs that are bite cases, there was one dog that had been there for 2 months living in the in this completely unnatural, dirty, and I felt inhumane environment. Beyond the dogs, there's no place for people to walk through from one area, from the front of the shelter to the back of the shelter, without going through the animal wards, which means taking either taking dogs through the cat wards, which increases the cat stress, or going through the hospital wards, which is contrary to good animal care practices. But either way, they're stressing out the animals, they're helping to spread disease. It just goes on and on. I sat for a very long time trying to figure out, you know, what can you do to improve this building, and I built in a whole series of short-term and long-term recommendations. But the reality is that facility should not have been built the way it was. It is a poor reflection on Houston, and if officials are going to be serious about modernizing the shelter, I think it would behoove them to build a facility that is a testament to the tremendous amount of caring and compassion among the animal lovers in the city of Houston.
And you also talk about seeing a stray puppy that came in, somebody brought in, that was newly vaccinated, meaning his immune system hadn't had time to develop yet, and was placed in a room used to house sick dogs with contagious diseases. And I was stunned by this, since we know that diseases are rampant there. Was there a reason for exposing this puppy to disease that you're aware of?
Well, I think, you know, what's happening at BARC is they are responding to the public criticism and the exposés and the condemnation that unfortunately have, I shouldn't say unfortunately, I mean, these issues have to come to light and they need to be rectified, but they are, you know, it's been a hot issue in the media lately, and so they're responding, trying to respond to them without a comprehensive overall plan. And that's what I hoped to have laid out in the report. So, you know, for example, in response to media exposés about puppies, being adopted and then dying in the newly adopter's home, they created a separate ward which clearly has a sign that says stray puppies with vaccinations. And the idea was, you know, let's separate these dogs until the vaccinations we give them have an opportunity to build immunity in the puppy before they move through the rest of the system. The problem is they're not using that room solely for that purpose, even though that was clearly intended and that's what the sign says. They were housing dogs, including dogs that have been exposed to distemper and that are clearly contagious in that room because there's available space in that room. And so when they brought the puppy in and vaccinated her, they stuck her in this room right next to these very, very sick animals. And unfortunately, later that day, I saw someone cleaning the cages and go from handling the sick animals to handling the puppy without washing their hands or changing their gloves. Now, I checked later, and you know, thankfully the puppy did make it through the system alive and was adopted into a home, but clearly those types of practices cause animals to needlessly get sick and cause animals to needlessly lose their lives.
Wow. It's 9:45. We'll be right back after this station break.
This is KPFT Houston, and here's a quick traffic update. There's a two-vehicle accident on 59 Southwest Freeway northbound at Shepherd, affecting two main lanes. So if you're over there behind that accident, it should take you about 21 minutes to get from Newcastle to Hazard. There's another accident on East Sam Houston Tollway southbound at Spencer Highway. It's 76 degrees and partly cloudy with a 20% chance of precipitation. After Open Journal, please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces with Rourke Smith. And then at noon, World Cafe with David Dye and his guest Juju music icon King Sunny Ade, who is touring North America with the re-release of his 2000 album, 7 Degrees North. Back to Open Journal.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Bette Sundermeyer, president of No Kill Houston. We're speaking with Nathan Winograd this morning, who's director of the No Kill Advocacy Center, who was hired by the City of Houston to assess Houston's animal control facilities, or BARC, and whose report was recently released. On page 27 of your report, you go through some short-term recommendations. Can you list a few of those for us?
Well, there's actually almost three pages of recommendations on what to do about that facility in order to do some improvements that will have an immediate life-saving impact. But the biggest involve, the basic stuff is you need hot water. There is no reason why the specialized agency of the fourth largest city in the United States isn't able to provide hot water in order to clean and disinfect the facility and animal spaces adequately. There has to be waterless hand washes to help contain the spread of pathogens in every one of the animal rooms. All of that designed basic stuff, minimal cost stuff in order to provide adequate care for the animals. But beyond that, it really comes down to making it a place where people want to visit. I mean, keep in mind that this facility is located in a remote part of the city. It's away from recreation corridors. It's away from prime residential corridors. It's away from prime retail corridors. So to an area of the city where if people want to visit the animals or adopt the animals, they're not going to come across it in their, normal day-to-day lives. It has to be a specific destination area, and the hours of operation sort of preclude working people and families with children. So when they do come, you want to make it as pleasant a place to visit as possible. There were very few places for the public to sit, so you have to stand the whole time. You have to walk through sick animals of people waiting to visit the clinic. There were cockroaches, frankly, everywhere. There were fecal matter outside. I mean, just basic stuff that are low budget items that basically involve good oversight of the staff and committing the staff to a high level of service. If I could summarize what I saw while I was there, is there's a basic mentality that seems to permeate that what they're doing is quote unquote good enough for government work, and we have to get past the agency from thinking that like that, because it's frankly not good enough. The people aren't getting value for their tax dollars. The animals are needlessly losing their lives. And all the while, you keep hearing that things are improving and that things are going to change. And while there were some things that looked better than what I had heard prior to coming there, change is certainly not coming quick enough, and particularly since a lot of the changes I recommend are not, high technical, high cost fixes. They're basic principles that any animal control shelter should have been doing from day one.
And even though I myself have been out to BART on many occasions and filled empty food and water bowls for dogs and cats many times, I was stunned to read that kittens were not fed or given fresh water until after 3 p.m., even though they were crying at the front of the cage. And they were only fed after you yourself fed them. And this occurred on more than one occasion in 2 days. And I was stunned that an entire ward had not been fed or given water, kennels cleaned, and staff was actually leaving for the day when you stopped them. I don't understand how this is possible. How are employees who are charged with this test, they're not doing it, and how are supervisors not seeing this?
Well, one of the things that, one of the major problems there is the lack of systems and the lack of true supervisory oversight. When you are running an operation, you have standard operating procedures, not just on paper, not just in a manual shoved in a drawer somewhere, but where it's utilized day in and day out. And so what BARC should have had, and hopefully has now, that I've pointed it out in the assessment, are checklists where every day staff that are assigned to the different wards have to go through the checklist and initial that they've done things. And, one of the things that they should do as soon as they get there in the morning is feed the kittens. feed the puppies, feed the animals that are most vulnerable and most susceptible to stress and disease and most at risk before they go on the rest of their duties. And, you know, assign not just tasks to individual people and to the different rooms, but times of completion and order of completion. And after doing that, supervisors should be walking through the different, all the different wards and ensuring not just that they're being done, but they're being done in a timely manner. That sort of system, very simple, very basic, did not exist at BARC. My hope is that it exists now because, you know, when I pointed out to staff, it wasn't like I watched the stuff and didn't do anything about it while I was there. You know, I pointed this out to the staff saying, look, you know, these kittens didn't get fed in this particular ward, didn't get fed till 3 o'clock, and they got fed at 3 o'clock because I couldn't wait any longer and I fed them. Well, the next morning, the kittens in that particular ward were fed first thing in the morning. So they fixed the very specific problem. But there were kittens in other wards, and those kittens didn't get fed. So rather than think, comprehensively and systematically, how can we ensure that all the kittens get fed in a timely manner? They fixed the very specific problem, the kittens in this particular ward. And so if BARC is going to commit itself to a high level of care and a high level of service, it needs a higher caliber of staff accountability measures. I think that's what it, you know, if I could summarize in one word what it comes down to, it comes down to accountability. It seems to be the biggest deficit that I saw facing BARC.
It's 9:53. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Beth Sundermeyer, president of No Kill Houston. We're speaking with Nathan Winograd, director of the No Kill Advocacy Center, who was hired by the city of Houston to assess Houston's animal control facilities and whose report was recently released. Another thing that I knew about but still stuns me is that dogs never get out of their kennels unless a volunteer does it. This was the issue that first got me involved when I found out that dogs stay in their kennels 24/7 unless a volunteer takes them out because no employee is charged with this. Explain why this is an impediment to getting these animals adopted and out of the system alive.
Well, let me clarify a little bit. Other than the bite ward dogs, which is true, don't get out, and like I said, at least one of them had been there for 2 months in these, you know, patently inhumane holding kennels, the dogs are taken out when staff cleans and they're tied out. So they're out for 10 minutes a day, tied out front with a very short leash from the neck to the wall. So they can't run around. They can't do normal, you know, dogs, species specific behaviors. The volunteers, I was told, are tasked with taking dogs in the South Ward, you know, the adoption side, twice a week. And when I was there on a Saturday, which was their twice monthly large adoption event, Wags to Whiskers, the volunteers were taking the dogs out. But for the most part, they are sitting in their kennels for extended periods of time, which leads to very frustrating behaviors on the part of the dog. So when they do get out, say an adopter shows interest in the dog, their behavior becomes over the top. They literally go crazy because it's the first time they've been out of a tiny little box. They get to run around in one of the fence yards, and so the adopter will look at this dog and say, well, that dog's too wild, that dog's too hyperactive, when it's not the dog, it's the unnatural environment of the kennel. So if BARC is going to adopt more animals and allow their animals to do what they do best, and that's show people how wonderful they are and what loving animals they are, it needs to make sure that they are well socialized and well cared for so that they can look and feel and show their best.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I have a million questions, but we can't get to them today. I sincerely hope that BARC leadership and city politicians, including those running for office, thoroughly read your report, and I hope that they aggressively follow every single recommendation, because I truly believe this is the only way that BARC is going to stop the killing. And there's a link to Nathan's report on our website at nokillhouston.org. It's almost 200 pages, so please go out and read it. There's a lot of good information. Thank you for being with us today, Nathan.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique voice on the Houston airwaves. And rather than rely on commercials or underwriting, KPFT relies on listener donations. Call 713-526-4000 to inquire about membership, or just go to our website, kpft.org. Anyone can produce an Open Journal. Visit our website for details. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces up next and World Cafe at noon. Thank you for tuning in to today's Open Journal here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
It's the 420 Drug War News.
This is Phil Smith with the Drug War Chronicle, and this week I'm going to talk about some tainted cocaine. On the last day of August, media outlets around the country ran an Associated Press story reporting that nearly one-third of the cocaine in the country is tainted with a veterinary medicine, a deworming agent called Levamisole. According to the AP, the tainted cocaine is responsible for at least three deaths in the U.S. and Canada, as well as sickening more than 100 other people. Now, those may be low numbers because lots of doctors aren't even aware of this. According to health authorities, the cocaine tainted with Levamisole is linked to an unusual incidence of agranulocytosis, which is a condition of a suppressed immune system whose symptoms include persistent sore throat, persistent or recurrent fever, swollen glands, painful sores, skin infections with painful swelling, thrush, and other unusual infections. Now, the DEA thinks that the Levamisole...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening. The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.